The West Live. The West Live with Ben O'Shea.
Well, I reckon we all got a bit of a COVID reality check yesterday when the Doherty Institute handed down its report commissioned by the federal government. Despite the Fed's vaccination targets, the sobering reality is there will continue to be coronavirus deaths. Joining me now to unpack the report is Professor Emma McBride from James Cook University. Good morning, Professor.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
And now, can you just outline some of the key takeaway scenarios outlined in this COVID modelling?
Sure. Well, the first thing that the group looked at was the 70% vaccination target, and that's 70% of people aged 16 and over, so about 56% of the Australian population. And they've said until we get to that point, we're really going to need to sort of lock down as hard as we have seen, for example, Victoria doing and South Australia and Western Australia for that matter. So short, sharp, early lockdowns. So that's the first thing that they had to say. The second thing they said was that if we get to 70%, at that point, we still need to do things to curtail transmission if there is an outbreak, but we can do a much more light touch. So that's like mask use and contact tracing and isolation and so on. And then we need to aim for 80% before we can really start sort of relaxing things further. So that they were the main messages from the Doherty report yesterday.
Mm. And so even at an 80% vaccination rate, there still will be COVID deaths though. That's the anticipation, is that correct?
That's right. So 80% of over 16s is not sufficient to achieve full herd immunity, and we can't really expect that we're going to have a COVID zero life, certainly not for the next many years. So if you're not vaccinated, you're not as well protected as you might think, and many people are going to be still exposed to COVID. So if you're not vaccinated, there's still that risk of death. And even for those who are vaccinated, vaccines are very good, but they're not 100% effective. So we will expect some people to become very ill, even if they're vaccinated. However, the majority of people who are vaccinated are very well protected by that vaccine.
Mm. And did the modelling give any idea of how many potential deaths there might be? And how would we contextualise that with, say, a normal flu season?
Yeah, so the modelling did have that in it. So if we had a completely unmitigated epidemic, we could be looking at 50,000 deaths. I mean, that's a bit alarmist, but we saw that in New York State, for example, 50,000 deaths, and they have fewer people there than Australia. They're less than 20 million, just under 20 million. So that is possible. However, we would hopefully take preventive and evasive action if that were the case, like we have in Australia. And we've had less than 1,000 deaths in Australia. Now, with vaccination, if you cover about 80% of the population, and if you really cover the elderly, the most vulnerable, very well, you can reduce that to a tenth of that number, so 5,000 or even less if you really get close to herd immunity. But and that's over 6 months to a year. But we can't expect zero deaths. We might be able to get away with sort of 1,000 deaths a year if we really focus heavily on getting close to a point where we have herd protection and herd immunity. And that's comparable to influenza. So we've got to get over this notion of zero tolerance for COVID cases and zero tolerance for COVID deaths. Otherwise, we're going to be in this sort of hermit nation in paralysis for the next... It's going to go on for years. So we've got to make a decision collectively as a nation as to what we can tolerate and just get used to the fact that actually this is an epidemic. The pandemic is going to cause some deaths. We have to minimise that, do everything we can to prevent it and encourage people to get vaccinated, but not assume we can get to zero cases and zero deaths.
Mm. And it makes a big assumption that we could get to 80% vaccination rate. Do you think that is achievable?
Yeah. Well, my view is that what we need to achieve is to have enough vaccine to be able to vaccinate 80% of the country, and that we have a really good campaign, and that every person who's eligible is offered the choice of having a vaccine. And at that point, that's when we should open up, because we can't make a hard and fast rule we have to get to 80, because what happens if we don't get there? We're sort of sitting around wondering what plan B is. So I think we really need to just say We need enough vaccine that every adult or person over 12, actually, it is at the moment, has the opportunity to get vaccinated if they want to, have a really good campaign explaining to people why that's a great idea. At the moment, we don't force people to be vaccinated. So, and nor should we force people who are vaccinated to go into lockdown when there's sort of a recalcitrant sort of 25% of the population who won't get vaccinated. That's their choice. And I think that's the point where we have to relax and go out of lockdown.
Mm. And what did you make yesterday of Anthony Albanese's idea of a $300 incentive to get people to take the jab?
Yeah, a lot of people are thinking about this, and my personal view is, and this is having spoken to people who are reluctant to get the jab, is that people are much more motivated by a return of freedoms than they are by $300. So my personal view is that if you don't get vaccinated and you are therefore at higher risk of transmitting COVID, then you are going to have to sort of be suffering greater restrictions on your personal freedoms. And that's going to be enough of an incentive to get a lot of people vaccinated. Mm. If you want to go interstate or visit friends or go to an event and people start saying, well, we'd really rather you not come if you're not vaccinated, then that's going to be a great incentive to get people vaccinated. And that's my view of how we should go, rather than giving people cash.
Yeah, right. Well, I mentioned at the top of the show new rules being introduced in New York City that are going to mean that if you're unvaccinated, you're not going to be able to go to the gym, you're not going to be able to dine in at a restaurant, you're not going to be able to go to any live performances, and that's going to start being enforced, I think, next month. So it sounds like that's the sort of thing that you think we should be looking at here in Australia.
I absolutely do think that. And people say, well, that's discrimination, and I understand their concern, but we're not discriminating against people because of their beliefs. We're discriminating against them because they pose a public health risk, and I think there's a huge difference between those two sort of motives. And the other thing we have to think about, of course, is there's some people who really desperately want to get vaccinated who aren't allowed to be vaccinated at the moment, and it's really unfair for those people. And so my view is it's time to open up the age groups to everybody who the TGA, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, says can get vaccinated, and let people be vaccinated and stop restricting it to the, you know, at the moment it's over 40s. Now, there's no good reason we're vaccinating over 40s and not vaccinating the 20-somethings. Mm. Who are the people spreading the actual virus at the moment, and they're the ones we should be targeting.
Yeah, probably the ones least likely to stick to some of the restrictions as well.
They've got lives, you know. Yeah. That's the thing. They want to get home.
They got FOMO. What about the kids under 16? The 12 and up cohort are able to get the vaccine in some places now. About even younger than 12? How are they included in this modelling, or are they not included at all?
Okay, so this is the thing about the modelling. If you believe that the reproduction number for the new COVID, the Delta strain, is as low as 3.6, which is about 40% more infectious than the original strain. So that means on average a person who has the infection will infect 3.6 others. That's what the Doherty has assumed. That's a fairly low figure. It's pretty optimistic. That's what they've gone with. Now, if you believe that, then you really don't need to vaccinate teenagers and younger children. But if you believe that that number is as high as 5, so an average person might infect 5 others, then without vaccinating the teenagers, the 12 to 15-year-olds, we will never reach herd immunity. It's just not possible. So it just really depends on what the infectiousness of the Delta strain turns out to be. My view is that it's more likely to be 5. So I'm very strong on the idea that we need to vaccinate our children right down to 12. Now, lower than 12, we don't have enough data about it in terms of safety, but we'll have that data within months because the trials are being done in the US for Pfizer in this 5 to 12-year-old group, and that information will be available very soon. So if it's safe, then I would say we should go even lower. And it may end up being that COVID vaccine is a childhood vaccine in the future. We don't know yet. So, yeah, so that's a really important point. And I think if the proof is in what we're observing right now about teenagers, we are seeing COVID transmitting amongst teens in Brisbane and in Sydney as well. So, the proof is right there in front of us that we're going to have to address transmission in the young teens.
Mm. Well, let's talk about Brisbane. Queensland, of course, is dealing with its biggest COVID outbreak since the first wave last year. 16 new cases today. Now there's a case up in Cairns. They're not sure if it's historical or not.
Yeah.
Now, do you think the situation seems under control, or is there still a lot of concern about where this outbreak could go?
Oh, no, I think it's very much up in the air. It's a bit like Sydney a month ago or whenever it was. This is the Delta strain. It is much more infectious than the original. So the intensity of tracking and tracing and isolation and quarantine has to be, so much higher. Now, on the other hand, we have a vaccine now, and that is our strategy. That is our special, it's our way out of this. So what we need to see is much higher uptake of vaccination. In Queensland, we have the lowest vaccination rates in the country, and in Australia, we have one of the lowest vaccination rates in the OECD. We are so far behind, we've just got to pick up our game and get people vaccinated.
Mm. And finally, before I let you go, we mentioned Delta. To what extent do future variants that we don't know about yet risk making this modelling look redundant?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think the model's robust. It's similar to mine, and so I'm not going to criticise it too much in terms of the outcomes and the inputs into the model. What it needs is to sort of look at, well, what if we get an even more infectious agent? And so the modelling that I've done, you can actually go online and anyone can look at it, and you do a sliding scale and say, well, what if we get something that's even a little bit more infectious? What is the impact of that? And so we can look at how that might change the policy around it. So, for example, if the agent is as infectious as 5, like I said, you will need to go down the age groups and vaccinate the teenagers at the very least. If it's as high as 7, we'll never reach herd immunity. It's just not possible with the current lot of vaccinations. So we need to be able to be very nimble and change policy based on that, especially with these new emerging variants all that are coming through all the time. Absolutely. Good point.
Stay light on our feet. I think that's the answer to responding to this pandemic. Mm-hmm. Professor Emma McBride from James Cook University, thanks for sharing your insights on The West Live today.
Thank you so much for having me.